Now we're going to hear from one of the biggest voices in American theater, Audra McDonald. Last month, she racked up her 6th Tony Award for her role as Billie Holiday in Lady Day Emerson's Bar and Grill. That means she is now the most decorated actress in Broadway history. Apart from Broadway, though, she's also a recording artist in her own right. Last year, she released an album called Go Back Home. And when I spoke with her about it, I noticed it had been 7 years since her previous album. So I asked her why she waited so long.
I had tried a couple of times over the past 7 years to get an album out, and I just wasn't, it wasn't coming, you know, it wasn't coming. And I thought, well, I'm not going to do an album until I have something to say. And when I look back on that now, I realize it's because life was happening and I was living life. And sometimes some people say, you know, as a performer, you go out and you give everything you have on stage or whatnot, and then you have to go and fill up again. And, you know, for good and for bad, I think life filled me up again. When I started putting songs together, it happened very quickly. A lot of it was songs that I had been singing for a while and had never recorded, like The Glamorous Life and Some Days. And others were songs that I had just learned from these wonderful crop of new composers who are out there, new musical theater, just wonderful stuff that I think I'd love to get out to the public. And then it all sort of started to take on the theme of a very personal theme of sort of, I think songs that I were drawn to were songs or things sort of like that had been happening in my life over the past 7 years, like being away from home or being away from my daughter, and then kind of ending with Make Someone Happy, which is just sort of where my life has come after losing my father and plane crash and going through a divorce and then remarriage and, you know, sort of the reemergence of a happier, maybe more seasoned, for sure, person.
Well, you know, it is true that you have a lot to say in this album. I'm just going to play a little bit from Married Love.
Married love, married love, here's my strategy of married love. If it seems
song is it's a wonderful song written by Michael John Lacusa, and it was written for a one-woman musical that he's written called ABC, which is based on a book by Marlene Dietrich. And in that book, it's basically, some people refer to it as Marlene Dietrich's dictionary. She just goes through the alphabet and just has random words for each letter of the alphabet, and then her thoughts on those particular words. And one of those words is married love. And a lot of it is just sort of her musings and her thoughts on marriage and her thoughts on partnership and relationships and how we as women must sort of do what we must do to be in relationships. You know, mind you, this was written, you know, in the 50s. And it's not necessarily specific personal experience of my own, but just the whole institution of marriage and everything that it brings about and everything that it tests in a person.
Go back to a time before you learned how to mate and then humiliate and when to delegate the blame. You were young and felt your love and it was wonderful. He noticed that you loved him and yes, he was.
I was thinking about our conversation and listening to the album. One word kept coming to mind over and over again. And the word that came to mind for me was raw. This album has so many raw feelings and ideas in it. I mean, it just, and even the way you talk about it in the liner notes about why you chose each song. I mean, the song about, you know, The Glamorous Life, which is a song about, you know, a little girl thinking about her mom who's an actress. And you are a mom who is an actress and a performer, and you have a daughter. That's raw. And I just.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, did it feel raw when you were putting this together?
Absolutely. And these are certainly songs that feel raw when I sing them. Songs, like I said, that I have a deep personal connection to.
Let's just play a little bit of The Glamorous Life.
Ordinary mothers lead ordinary lives, keep the house and sweep the parlor, mend the clothes and tend the children. Ordinary mothers, like ordinary wives, make the beds and bake the pies and wither on the vine. That mine. Dying by inches every night, what a glamorous life. Brought on by winches to recite, what a glamorous life. Ordinary mothers never get the flowers, and ordinary mothers never get the joys. Ordinary mothers couldn't cough for hours maintaining their poise.
Quite literally, I say this over and over about this album. If someone were to write a Broadway show about my life over the past 7 years, this would be the soundtrack. It really would be. And which is probably why it ends up sounding a bit raw, because it's all, if not, you know, specific within the lyric, the idea of the themes that I'm exploring in this album are all very, very, very specific and personal and very fresh.
Ordinary mothers thrive on being private, and ordinary mothers somehow can survive it. Ordinary mothers never know they're just standing still with the kettles to fill while they're missing the thrill of the glamorous.
I do want to say I'm sorry about your dad. I
mean, oh, thank you. That was hard.
Under any circumstances, I mean, losing a dad is hard. A plane crash. I mean, your dad was a pilot as well. And I
It was really difficult, and it happened so, you know, just on a bright sunny day in California, and they still really don't know what caused the crash. And it was a bright sunny day in New York, and I just finished doing a matinee of 110 in the Shade, and I got this phone call from my stepmom saying, your dad's gone, you know. And so I realized it really was the catalyst that sort of forced a lot of change in my life. And going through that trauma and grief and learning how to mourn and realizing that I was mourning, it changes you. It really does.
How do you think it changed you?
I started to take stock in my life really quickly and look at my life and say, okay, who am I? What do I really want? What am I missing? What do I need? Because I realize that life is short, and it's easy to kind of get cocky and forget about that, you know, when you're young and just sort of trapezing about your life and doing what you got to do. And then something like that happens. And especially when it's, you know, my dad was, you know, 6'6" and strapping, huge guy. I mean, just, you know, there was no better picture of like a big, healthy 62-year-old man, and you know, he lifted weights every day. To lose that sort of security, you know, I lost my daddy. I lost the person who I think, if something really were wrong and I really needed help and I needed him to beat up someone for me or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, as a little girl, losing your daddy, all of a sudden that was gone. So it forced me to look at life and try and live it more presently and more fully and more honestly and for better purpose.
Which is why I don't know how you get through I'll Be Here. I don't know how you get through it. It's from Ordinary Days, a play which is inspired by 9/11.
Some days I don't get through it, I have to say. Some days when I'm singing it, I don't get through it. You know, for me, it certainly has a personal meaning in terms of losing my father really quickly. But also, it's kind of a tribute to my stepmom, watching my stepmom have to, like, get her life back together and find her life too, losing the love of her life, and then all of a sudden just like, how do I move on? And watching her deal with that and try and pick up the pieces. And there's some very specific lines in that correlate directly to her, like, take off my ring and you let yourself smile, you know, all those things that I've watched her go through and thought, well, that that's why this song, I think, you know, resonates with me.
It's such a beautiful song. I hate to give people, and it tells such a story, and I hate to give people, but I just want to play a little bit of it, even though I feel bad because I'm not doing it justice by playing a clip of it, but here's just a little bit.
I don't mean to ruin your evening by bringing up all of this stuff. You're probably wondering why I even called you tonight. Well, today something happened that spooked me all right. I saw the storm cloud of papers fall down from the sky, and I thought of that day, and I started to cry. When sure as I breathe, I heard John clear as day, saying, hey, you're allowed to move on, it's okay, because I'll be here, even if you decide to get rid of my favorite sweater. Even if you go out on my birthday this year, instead of sitting at home, letting all of life's moments pass by, you don't have to cry, because I'll be here when you start going back to the places we went to together. When you take off my ring and you let yourself smile, when you meet someone handsome and patient and true.
It is remarkable, isn't it, that something so beautiful can come out of something so ugly, which is like a lot of your work, like Porgy and Bess, for example, right? It's so beautiful, and yet it's about a lot. There's ugliness in it, you know.
Yeah,
there's
so much
personal
pain.
Ugliness,
yeah.
Pain, racism. Mm-hmm. It's about, mm-hmm. you know, so many things. I was curious about that. When you think about the beauty of your instrument and what you're using it for, and then the kinds of stories you want to tell. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I'm just wondering how you think about that.
Well, for me, you know, the way I've been drawn to music has always been something that moves me and something that sort of reflects something that I want to say or something that I feel or something that I believe in, or story-driven things especially. And so the voice is very important, but the meaning behind the voice and, you know, just the fact that you use the voice as the means to communicate the story, the feeling, the whatever, that's what's most important to me, which is probably why I didn't connect so well in the operatic world, because I was always willing to sacrifice the sound if it, you know, made a moment better. And that's not, I mean, what is done in opera, and I love opera, and I wish I could do it, but it's a different thing in opera where, you know, the voice... The beauty of the voice is what's most important, you know.
The theater has been a home for you and has been good to you. Do you think the theater is doing what it should be doing for our society? Is it telling the stories that it needs to tell?
Yes. I think if you look everywhere that there's theater, I think if you look just on Broadway, then you won't necessarily see all the stories that are needing to be told, because... They're not all there. I mean, for many reasons, whether it's, you know, commercial or they're. I don't think it's that they're not being written, because I think they are being written, but they're not being brought to that huge visible commercial level. You know, and all the wonderful work that's being done in underground theaters and off-Broadway, off-Broadway, and regional theaters all around the country, it's there. It absolutely is there. And as it has been since, you know, the ancient Greece, I mean, it's there, and it's commenting on society and commenting on human nature and whatnot. I think it's absolutely there. It's just maybe not necessarily in the most commercial and visible places that we would like it to be.
That was singer and six-time Tony Award-winning actress Audra McDonald.